Hello again, listeners. Hello again the first time, new listeners. My name's Matt Gourley. This is I Was There Too, the show where I talk to people with small but significant roles in classic and popular movies, sometimes television. Today, a movie. And today, what a movie. Catwoman. And today, what a guest. Good friend and wonderful interview subject, Janet Varney. We talk about her experience playing the role of Party Girl in the scene where Halle Berry as Catwoman ventures across apartments to tell the neighbors to turn it down a little bit. Janet had a scene where the dialogue was eventually cut, but it still earned her a credit of Party Girl and regular residuals, one of which she just received after this interview and sent me a text. The amount? $45.43. For a movie from 13 years ago, that's not too bad. Janet's just the best, and this was a great conversation, so if you haven't seen Catwoman or just looking to revisit it, there's no better time. If you like this show, you can give it a review on iTunes, 5 stars even, and it helps the show rise up in the ranks. You can also follow me on Twitter at Matt Gourley, and Instagram and Letterboxd, or I Was There Too on Twitter as well. Thanks for listening, subscribe, and tell your friends. And now, let's get to some Catwoman.
The film, Catwoman. The year, 2004. The role, Party Girl. The actor, Janet Varney.
We're here to talk about Janet Varney in Catwoman.
Yeah, we have official business.
That's right, we do. This is important. Now, you and I, actually on your podcast, the JV Club, have talked about yours, I think, complicated relationship with parties. You play Party Girl in this film. Before we even get into the particulars of Catwoman itself,
no.
I think I've shot maybe 2 party scenes and things before, and it's like, it is in a way like being at an actual party, but in some ways the worst kind, because it's a party with people you don't know at all and with whom you're forced to small talk with between takes. But usually by the end of what's usually like a long day of shooting, you've bonded. Did you have that experience at all with your other actors?
Well, let me say one quick thing,
please,
Matt Gourley, about it almost being as bad as a real party. I will say this. What I do appreciate about fake parties in a scene is they're dead quiet.
Oh, that's right.
Most of the time. Yeah. If there's any dialogue at all, they are dead quiet. While that's super weird and awkward, and it's a huge challenge for background actors and actors alike
who are enjoying some music.
Yeah,
right?
who are trying to act like what are we all listening to that we're not actually hearing? And how loud is it? How much do we have to act like we're shouting to each other? At the end of the day, at least it's usually more quiet than a loud party, because that's when I came in today. I apologize to you because I felt like I started feeling so raspy, and when I woke up this morning, I thought, oh, I'm for sure getting sick, and then I realized, no, it was because I was at a function last night where I was shouting to be heard, and I didn't have anything worth shouting. There was nothing I was saying.
But you have no choice.
That merited blowing my vocal cords.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. Because the other problem is if you don't shout, you force people to lean in uncomfortably close to you.
Yeah, and also the food that this particular function had decided to serve was upscale sushi.
Ooh.
But at the end of the day, it's still raw fish.
Uh-huh.
That's what everyone's putting into their mouths. So who wants to, you know what I mean? Like, what do you want? Spicy tuna right up in someone's business?
This is a
just
no
to
win.
Say, like, your hair looks great. It's awful. I'm such a jerk about that stuff. I feel like it's so clear. I telegraph it so clearly that I'm like,
yeah.
Here we all are.
I'm the same way. In fact, I try so hard to play against that type because I know how miserable I am at parties. People must feel the like artificial energy.
You try to actor it up and be big man on campus?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't schmooze, but I plaster a smile on my face and I'm real interested. And it's not that I'm not interested in what they're saying.
Yeah.
It's just I'm playing a role.
Uh-huh.
And
totally
I'm just thinking about getting in bed.
I totally get it.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Well, here we are. You lived through it. How long was this? Was this a one-day shoot for you in this party, a full day?
For Catwoman?
Yeah.
Catwoman was, first I'll preface it by saying I can't remember if I had actually officially even moved down here. If I had, it was very, very early on. There's a sort of a nebulous period where I was staying on my friend's couch in Koreatown, auditioning, doing a pilot season, getting like the occasional job here and there just for that like 3-month period, and then finding a little apartment and moving in. And I think I had just moved into that apartment. I don't think I had to go back to Riley and Sarah's couch, thank God. But it was a show up in the late morning, early afternoon, and then we wrapped at like 5 in the morning.
Wow.
I was there forever.
Is this because there was some special effects work or wire work or
something?
There
was wire work. Yeah. There's definitely wire work. I don't know exactly. Like, that's another thing is, of course, you're not really privy, particularly for me since I was just getting started, just being down here and working at all, you're not really privy to what's taking so much time. You know that there's a tremendous amount of downtime. I don't remember anybody, like, overhearing any sort of reason or picking up on anything that would account for why it took so long. But I also know that it wasn't a reshoot. It was not a scene that previously existed, but it was part of a package of reshoot pickups that were all post-production.
Oh, like they needed some more.
Yeah, one
spice.
Assumes it was in an attempt to make it a better movie, which we all know worked spectacularly. That's what made it so good. Thank God for those reshoots. So, so it was really hard. Like, I just to fast forward to the end of it, I was so tired driving back. That I started crying.
Days. Oh my God.
Yeah,
really?
I started crying. I mean, I really had that existential, like, is this what I've signed up for? Is this what is what it's like working here?
Knowing
Shit.
That was the end of this scene, like, that gives this scene a whole new light, knowing that seeing you there experience this whole Catwoman rocker confrontation ends with you driving home crying. I'd like to rewatch the film. I might give it some more. Wait.
Get some texture, some gravitas.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. I mean, it is somehow mentally and physically exhausting because you have to stay alert for that long.
Yeah.
And the nerves, especially if you're beginning with this type of
thing. Oh, for sure. You want to do a great job. I mean, I had lines that got cut. I can't remember what they were.
Okay.
I'll try. But the process of getting that job was really exciting because I don't know if you have I know you have a long list of inquiries.
But I like to take it off the guest. So let's go with that. Let's start with how you ended up in Catwoman.
Well, I have very fond memories about it because the casting director, Wendy O'Brien, it was the casting director. She was, again, it was one of the kind of first, I'm sure it was like the first movie I even got to audition for. I remember I also got to audition same spring for like a pre-read, which for those of you who don't know the business means you go in and meet a casting director, they put you on tape, and then if they like you, they bring you back. There's a whole process. And certainly for some crazy reason, they brought me in to read for the Invisible Woman in that first Fantastic Four movie.
No kidding. Wait.
Which was like, but for a pre-read. But I mean, I had no resume. Like I had done the Aspen Comedy Festival with my sketch group. That was about it.
Is this the one that Jessica Alba ended up
yeah,
playing?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
You seem to fit the type more.
Well, I got to audition for it for the casting director just as like a, I don't know, I'm sure it was like my manager knew the casting director or something. I was like, she's new, she's hot, let's, but.
Now I want to rewatch that movie.
Yeah.
Just Janet imagine Hardy in there.
That was also, that was a hard audition because anytime you're supposed to pretend that you have powers, I mean, I really feel for people who are constantly going out for stuff like that, if that's a thing, because that was really hard. Like you had to pretend in the audition that you turned invisible. Like,
what?
how do you convey that?
How did you?
I don't know. I feel like I just got an intense look on my face, like I needed to poop or something. I don't know.
Or ran out the door and just yelled your lines in. I have this issue at home because Amanda's the real actor in the family, and she'll sometimes go out for things where it's like has an action scene, and she's always like, why would they audition
you
with this?
I know. Like, and you don't know what the protocol is. Do you sort of, like, the same with, like, a romantic scene. Do you, like, pretend like you're actually kissing someone deeply, or do you just make intense eye contact with the casting director for that moment? Like, we both know what's happening here, but I can't kiss you. What do you do in those scenarios? And definitely same with action. Do you drop to the ground and, like, run? I mean, and I don't know. There isn't, like, a protocol that is across the board. So some casting director or producer will be mad at you that you didn't run at full speed in place for a second, and then another one will think you're an idiot if you do. So I don't typically have to do those kinds of auditions, and thank God. So I didn't. I had to pretend like I was invisible. Possibly, I don't know, does an invisible woman also have some sort of other power to move things or something? I just remember straining.
Remember. Yeah.
I remember straining to zero actual results.
And so somewhere this exists on tape, right?
I would guess so.
Oh,
I mean, God, I'm sure
anything.
They record over it. So that was awful. And then, so this one was, you know, this is like the other person in the scene ostensibly has the magical powers,
yes,
or the prowess. But I auditioned for it, and Wendy O'Brien, who remains one of my all-time favorite casting directors, she's, just to give you a picture, I don't know why this is important, but she looks kind of like Laura Dern if Laura Dern were freckled and redheaded, but she's very tall, she's super cute, and I feel like within the first, like, minute of us meeting, she was calling me Varney.
Oh, that's,
and I just
feel
love
good.
That. You know, she's just very like, all right, Varney, let's see what you got.
Yeah.
And she just makes people feel so comfortable and at home. And I did the scene, and she like sat back and she was like, you're the first person I've seen who did it right.
Oh, nice.
And I was like, I remember saying, how could it possibly be done any other way? Because it was like two exchanges, you know? There's just nothing. She's like, Varney, you'd be surprised. Welcome to Hollywood. And so then I got it. And so that felt like I kind of tucked that away, even though the shooting experience was so awful. The audition experience of being made to feel special in some way by someone I immediately hit it off with did stick with me. It made me feel like, oh, okay, I'm not out of my depth, because I do think I felt like that.
You
a
got
lot.
It like that, like no callback or anything. They just
It was not a huge role,
and
I'm sure they were in a huge rush.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember the like idea of the exchange?
Yeah, it's just like she does a bunch of stuff, and then I'm like low key but super impressed, like a female power moment of like, wow, you're really, you know,
you're representing,
you're really
us.
Yeah, you really got, you know, something. And she's like, that's my, I sure do, you know, just some sort of like verbal high five from a low energy sarcastic person at a party.
That off the cuff example of the dialogue you just spat out right now wouldn't be too out of place in that film.
Just a word burger of just messy, garbagey dialogue.
I'm fascinated by this party because I think it's in an apartment building. However, there is
– and they shot it in like a – it was some sort of like warehouse that was – I remember I had to park in the Home Depot parking lot in Atwater – not really Atwater, but
– oh, this was L.A.?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, because the rest of the movie was shot in Vancouver, so they did
things. All the pickups and reshoots must have been in L.A. No, this was like – this was the Home Depot parking lot. And I feel like I parked my car and walked to the warehouse. So it was just some building.
This is the Glendale Home Depot.
Yeah, it's like
just
under
outside.
The freeway,
yes,
kind
by
of.
By the 5
yeah,
and the 134.
Exactly right. Exactly
many,
right.
Many, many hours there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, exactly. That's – so it's that – oh, wait. The 5 and the – yeah. Yeah,
and
exactly
by the
right.
Train tracks and Golden yes. Road Brewing
and
is there.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And the doctor that if you go to do Drunk History is right by there.
Oh, really?
Who's this shady character that's just like,
that's
you're
great.
Healthy.
There's a woman that a lot of us have been sent to, and I remember there was a Thrilling Adventure Hour backstage, like getting ready in the ladies' room, and one of the girls was like, oh my God, I just had this, like, I'm kind of, like, I'm feeling a little weird because I had to get one of those, like, I'm shooting a pilot checkups just to make sure I was healthy, and I saw this woman, and she told me I have an irregular heartbeat.
Oh, geez.
And Padgett was like, wait a minute, who was it? And I can't remember if it was Autumn. It was someone, but they were like, it was this woman. And Patrick goes, she tells that to everyone. And all of a sudden, I realized that I had seen her for dinner in a movie 12 years ago.
And she told me
I had an irregular herpes.
What?
Isn't that crazy?
Is she drumming up business like hoping you'll
come
back?
I don't know. I think she's just like, however she's listening to the stethoscope. Because I went and saw a doctor, and they were like, I don't know what they're talking about. It was such a long time ago. So we discovered this conspiracy of one that this crazy female doctor, that's what it reminded me of. But so in that parking lot, and it was just whatever purpose. I mean, it was definitely like, oh, this is a brick and mortar, bare bones situation, warehouse thing where they had set it to be this party. But there was no air. There was no, you know, it was just dusty and dirty and hot. And they were pumping all that fake smoke into it. So it was the summer or late spring here. here and it was hot. So it was definitely, again, the physical experience of it was like very negative.
But I'm trying to wrap my head around who these people are. Because
The rockers?
Yeah. Yes. Well, the guy in this scene that has the confrontation with Catwoman, not Selina Kyle Catwoman, but Patience
Catwoman.
Phillips or something like that. I can't remember.
Oh, that sounds right.
His credit is he's the rocker. That's his character name.
Yeah.
So presumably this is a band that is having a party, like a loft party, but there's also a neon lit bar in there, neon sign that says bar. And these people are all dressed exactly like out of the same exact catalog. So I couldn't tell like how many are fans, how many are part of the band. Is this the big world's biggest alt rock band with no guests?
Don't give it the credit of being alt rock. It's like my stepdad's in a Harley club, Harley Davidson group. And they also play like music on the side. They do covers of Warrant songs.
Oh God! So let's talk about your wardrobe. I could only see so much of it.
Oh yeah, what was my wardrobe? Fuck! I should have probably watched it.
Black and white. Oh yeah,
I should have. Please, Jen, I insist. I can't. I should have maybe watched it to be reminded of all of this. I can't remember. Was it like was my tattoo showing? Because that might have been.
See, this is what I want to ask about details, because you can kind of see your top, and it looks like a black and white, almost black and white tiger stripe or something.
Maybe it was.
And your hair is kind of like.
It was short back
short
then, so it's probably like
feathers, spiky kind of thing. Yeah.
Like, God, that sounds as awful as it was.
Like a gem in the hologram.
Feathers, spiky. Oh, heavens.
Right. You do. So what was the tattoo of it?
Well, I used to have a tattoo. So I remember that was one thing that – it was like the one thing I could expose my arm for in the audition. I actually had – it was just a double band on my bicep, like my bicep on my arm, on my upper arm, on my gun. Just so like a – you know, like a maybe like a one-inch thick black band and then, you know, a quarter of an inch under that, just a thinner one. It's kind of hard to describe. It was very boring and plain. Okay. But whenever I auditioned for stuff down here, no one knew how to handle that because I had blonde hair and blue eyes, I guess. And so it was inconceivable. Where I had just moved from San Francisco, where like everyone has tattoos and everyone's parents has tattoos. So I remember so I think I probably thought like, oh, they'll probably – they'll probably based on the premise of this party, I'm sure I'll be showing my tattoo. And then I guess it sounds like I wasn't. Like I was wearing something with sleeves.
I look hard at these details. No, I don't think you were, but I don't think you get a clear shot at your arm. Because most of your stuff, because you get a really.
They didn't do a slow zoom on my arm.
They should have, and it's a lost opportunity. You get a real, like, good look at you, especially in this two shot, which I'm sure you probably remember, where Halle Berry has pinned this rocker down.
Yeah, it's close that's up right on where her. Our stuff was supposed to happen.
Okay, that makes sense.
And then it got cut.
Yeah, because it is just a framing of her and you behind her, and you are giving these looks of like, whoa.
You know,
like,
you know what? They didn't need the words because I was my own worst enemy because my acting was so good. It was all said in those looks.
How bummed were you when they cut those lines?
I was crushed.
Were you?
And I was pissed. You know, it felt like all that for that.
Yeah.
But sometimes I still get like a 12-cent residual for it.
That's right, because you're featured
and
in this.
I never would have been on this podcast if not. I'm trying to think of what else I was in that I didn't have a featured role in.
Wait till you see the residuals for this podcast.
I can't wait. I actually, in anticipation, opened up a separate savings account
for it.
Just going to funnel it right in.
Smart play.
Yeah.
At this time, superhero films were kind of beginning to boom, like the X-Men films and stuff. So this, when you got this, it must have seemed like quite an opportunity.
Oh,
right?
For sure. And I mean, I don't remember, like, I guess the first X-Men had come out, so Halle Berry had been Storm.
I think even the second one possibly.
Oh, yeah.
I could be wrong. Yeah.
Could be. No, I definitely thought, and I was a huge fan of Batman Returns. I loved Michelle Pfeiffer's Catwoman.
Yeah.
I was definitely a person who loved the concept of Catwoman, and so was excited that they were doing a whole movie about it, and I'm sure I was excited to, you know, quote unquote work with Halle Berry.
Yeah,
I don't
sure.
know.
Yeah.
That felt exciting.
Let's get into the like technical side of the day.
Oh, right. Sure.
Let me see.
Let me be clear. I didn't have to wear a wire.
No, right.
I didn't have to do any stunts.
I've got questions, some things you might have witnessed. For instance, apparently this was being shot on IMAX at times, but then they had to give up on it. So I'm wondering if this is a reshoot. They probably didn't even bother with IMAX cameras.
I don't think there was anything special about the cameras. I don't think so.
That's so funny to think this film was shot also in IMAX, but they were so late that they couldn't get the visual effects work done in time. They couldn't get the IMAX stuff processed in time to do the visual effects, which if you see the visual effects, it's kind of like, what were you waiting for there? I don't know. But
yeah, no IMAX cameras. So, well, would I know? Have I ever shot anything that was IMAX? Would I have known? What
they're
would
like
I,
these
different?
Giant
oh, really?
Things that,
yeah, yeah, nothing like that.
Yeah. All right. So there was some wire work with Holly Berry.
And then the day she couldn't, you know, Halle Berry was not available that day. So Halle Berry came in and the cat suit was extra. The mask was extra large. So you couldn't really see more. The wire work was, I feel like I remember her. I mean, what would it have been? Like what? I wish I would have watched this. Maybe you can tell me. She was up somewhere high, so she sort of floated down to pinning the rocker.
She jumps on a table.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But did she jump from the ground up to the table, or did she jump high and then down from somewhere? Like, did she appear on the scene high up? Like, oh, how did she get up there?
No, she comes through the door to tell the guy to turn the music down.
Oh, okay.
And he shuts the door in her face
request.
After, like, basically harassing her.
Okay, this is all coming back to me
and
now.
She kicks the door open.
Yeah.
And she walks in with attitude and style.
Yeah.
Jumps up on the table.
I know Party Girl was paying attention.
I can't tell if there's wire work when she jumps on the table because that's pretty basic. But
yeah.
When she flies off the table,
yeah.
It's pretty clear that she's, like, had wires and they've been painted out digitally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they definitely had to do that a bunch of times.
Oh, boy.
Again, very hot in there, lots of fake smoke. That was something that they did over and over again. It was very boring.
Oh, I forgot
to be on
too.
The outside of.
So she also grabs the like bar soda gun that shoots. And she sprays the speakers and fizzles them out
because
she wants the music off. And then breaks that off and uses it as a whip, which also looks very CG at times. So they must have had like a stand-in for that or
something.
Yeah,
I think they did have. I'm trying to remember if there was a stunt woman ever there. And I don't think it was. I feel like she did everything that I saw. But I do I now remember this, the spraying the thing. Yeah, there was kind of – it was like not good effects, but there was a lot of stuff. Now that you're saying this, it makes sense that it took so long because I'm sure like the setups and the resetting and stuff like that probably took forever.
Right, because they use real water at times too.
I'm sure they did.
Clean and reshoot.
Yeah,
and
I'm sure they did. There was a lot of time. There was nothing outside of – I mean, I think maybe I had, you know, a tiny room in a trailer to change my clothes. That seems likely. But the warehouse building itself, the set was upstairs and the holding area was downstairs.
Uh-huh.
And even like the guy who played the rocker, anybody there who even had a speaking role was just with the extras.
Gotcha.
Only Hallie would like disappear and then come back from her trailer.
Okay.
I'm sure they wanted to do this as cheaply as possible.
Yeah.
So yeah, there were I don't remember like there being really food or anything. It was a sweaty, painful waiting process. It wasn't like, oh, you go, you know, go do this thing. And this is also before, like, I had a cell phone, but we didn't have iPhones. You know, you can play games on things, and there's no iPads. It's like, I'm sure I had, like, a book.
So were you hanging out or talking with any of the other actors or?
Matt, I'm glad you asked.
Thank you. She's going to take a water. I'll fill while she takes a water break. Okay.
The one thing that I can tell you that I feel like is unique to my experience shooting this movie that you will not get from any other guest.
This is exclusive.
Is as follows.
Uh-huh.
So this is one of the whole, like, the waiting periods of deep into the night. You've been there already 14 hours no end in sight. And no one's telling what's going on. And I was sitting on some sort of dirty futon situation with a couple of other people. And I don't even remember that much interaction between – you asked about bonding.
Yeah.
I don't really remember that much up to that point in general. I just don't think that people were – maybe the extras who knew each other already were or something, or maybe they had set aside some little fake private area that really was just like, you can be on this couch. Everyone else will be over in the – but I hadn't really talked to many people, and at some point – a couple of people, I think we started talking bonding over being miserable and tired and hot. But there was a guy who was there. His girlfriend, like, went to go get some water or something, and so we were just sort of killing time. And I don't know how it came up. I really don't know how it came up, but I somehow we got into the conversation that, you know, he was like, oh, do you – well, he probably was just asking me about me. I mean, I had words to say, so I must have been a VIP.
Right. Oh, yeah. People knew you.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm sure he was probably like, hey, you know, how do you like, you know, this business? How do you, and I'm sure I said, well, I just moved down here. I really haven't been here very long. And then, you know, he asked, where do you live before? And I said, San Francisco. And then he said, is that where you're from? And then I said, no, I'm originally from Tucson, Arizona. And he said, oh, I was born in Tucson. And I was like, oh, that's weird. I don't meet that many people from Tucson. That's cool that you're also from there. But you didn't grow up there? He's like, no, I moved after first or second grade, something like that. And I said, oh, wow, that's so crazy. What school did you go – like, what – did you go to – like, what elementary school did you go to? And he goes, I feel like it was like he's like, I barely remember anything from that time because, you know, we moved so fast when I was little and – but he's like, I feel like it was like a magnet, you know, art school or something. And I said, was it Drachman? And he said, that actually sounds right. And I was like, oh, and by the way, he wasn't an actor. He was the boyfriend of a girl who was a background actor who convinced him to come and be an extra with her for this movie. He was not interested in background work, nor was he interested in acting. He was there with his girlfriend to support his girlfriend.
Good guy.
And I was like, this is crazy. I went to Drachman and I said, what's your name? Because, you know, he said, my name's Duncan Campbell. And I, like, got goosebumps. I just was giving him the weirdest look. I think he was like, what? And I couldn't think – for some reason, I picked the most dramatic – I mean, now I'm proud of myself. But I picked the most dramatic way to reveal this to him. But I was like, you see this scar? And I lifted up my head and showed him the scar that I have on my chin. And he said, yeah. And I said – I got this scar from chasing you in first grade, trying to kiss you in the playground, and I slipped and slid across the ground on the concrete and busted my chin open, and I had to go to the hospital and get stitches. I still have a scar from this. We called you Dunkin' Donuts Campbell Soup.
I was already thinking of that. I was Duncan Hines Campbell Soup. Poor guy. Probably never lived it down.
And listen, he was cute and popular for a first grader. Don't worry about it. But I just – and then I just laid that on him. And he was like, what? And he's like, I don't remember any of this. I said, well, I'm sure you don't. Like, this is not significant to you, but I have a war wound from this experience. And I said, I'm still friends with your friend, like one of your best friends at the time. He was best friends with two kids, one Chip Caldwell, the other Derek Ettinger. And I said, Derek and I – and he goes, I remember Derek. And I said, well, Derek and I went to all of our magnet schools together. Yes, it does smell like soup.
Or burning or something.
It does smell like burning, but I – immediately turned it into the smell of soup.
Or toast.
For some
Are we
reason.
All having a stroke?
It smells like... Maybe it's like some stew. You know how people at Earwolf like to cook up a shepherd's pie on a September
true.
Day? So we're going to get to the bottom of that. But no, I said... So I was like, Derek and I went to all – we went to – he was the only person that I went to first through third school with, fourth through sixth, then 7, 8, then 9, 10, 11, 12. The only person that – because you bop around to all these different magnet schools.
Oh, right.
He's the only person that I went to every single year of school with, and he and I were still friends. And that's an insane coincidence in a really weird situation.
Wait, now how did Duncan hold up? Is he still worth chasing across the playground?
He looked – zero, like I remember little kid. Like I have pictures from my first grade class where everyone's, and of course I'm in the back dead center because I was always the tallest.
Yeah.
And he's there. So that's the only memory I have of what he looks like is just looking at that picture, and nothing about the person I was talking to looked anything like that kid.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I had a little girlfriend, as much as you can have a girlfriend in second grade, mm-hmm. Janae. We'd play handball together, but we were an item.
Uh-huh.
And went to a family function to find out she was my second cousin. Had no idea.
Really? How dramatic.
Yeah, yeah.
The families must have been appalled.
Yeah, I mean, look, we still don't talk about
what it. What a Romeo and Juliet.
I know.
Except those are two totally unrelated families. Never mind.
How was it working with Halle Berry with your interchange as an actress, as a woman?
I feel like she was stressed. She was, and her stress was not unpleasant stress. It was more like frantic, I don't know, like a addled. Pleasant adult stress.
Yeah.
It wasn't,
oh,
she wasn't
nice.
Mean.
Yeah.
But she definitely wasn't like happy or friendly about being there. But she definitely didn't seem like a prima donna at all. She just seemed like she was like, okay, well, let's try to get this done, guy. You know what I mean? It was more that sort
yeah,
of.
I wonder how much of a sense she already had about where this movie was heading.
I think
was there
a great
any
question.
Sense of that on the set?
Not, I don't think so.
Because I want to ask also about the director.
But it wasn't fun. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was not a fun experience.
And most of them probably aren't anyway. Like, it's rare that a film is just fun.
Yeah, maybe.
Because it is
long. I haven't done a ton of movies. The movies I've done have all been, like, low budget enough and goofy enough that it's hard not to have it be kind of fun,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, that's nice.
But, yeah, this is one of the most unfun experiences I've had. Like, the mood was unfun. The people were brusque, you know, dismissive.
Ugh.
It was not enjoyable.
I wonder if because it was reshoots, if the director was even there, because I'm fascinated by this guy. First of all, his real name is Jean-Christophe Comard.
Oh, yeah. Let's try to figure out if he was there, because that seems like someone I would remember.
But he goes only by the name of Pitoff. A one-named guy, Pitoff.
Was he a former cinematographer or something?
He was a visual effects guy. This was his first time directing.
Has he directed since?
No. Well, he has 5 director credits to his name, the other 4 of which you've never heard of.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I think this did ruin him because this – and I'm not sure how much is his fault because I think there was a lot of problems plaguing
this script.
Is there
a picture of him? I can bring one up. I can't. It's funny. I really don't remember ever being spoken to by a director, but that seems crazy, right?
Well,
Is it just like
a reshoots director?
It was like an AD
first AD
or something.
But also maybe it was just a reshoot director. So this film was originally conceived right on the heels of Batman Returns because Michelle Pfeiffer's Catwoman was so hot and she ended up backing out. Then Ashley Judd got put in the role.
Oh, I didn't know. Oh, maybe I did know that.
That fell through. And then 28 screenwriters later,
this is
what it arrived at.
28.
Yes.
It only gets better with every
redux. That's right.
Redux.
It's now a Catwoman with a different name who's a graphic designer for a beauty company that has supernatural power. She's turned into Catwoman supernaturally because a cat breathes into her mouth.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I got to watch this again.
I've become an expert.
So it's like, it could have been called like Catwoman, T-O-O. He does look really familiar. I think he was there.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he was there.
Pitoff.
Yeah. I had very little honor. You know what I want to say? I think he actually might have been really nice and sort of respectful in the like fledgling filmmaker, like, I want to make everyone feel like, but again, very little interaction with him.
I feel for this guy. I do.
I don't know why I would know what he looked like otherwise. It's not like I did a bunch of homework about it, you know, before I did it or after I did it. So I knew exactly who that, like, as soon as you showed me the picture, I was like, oh yeah.
Okay.
You could have fooled me and done like a different person. And
really?
To test me? We'll see if
that was Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Oh, no wonder he looks so familiar. He was definitely there, though. He was definitely there.
All right. So let's talk about when you finally see it. You're disappointed that your lines are cut, but you can see.
I think I knew already. I feel like somehow I found that out. I don't know how I would have known, but I remember because I remember going and I remember saying like, I'm going to see it anyway.
Yeah.
Because I feel like maybe Wendy knew. I don't know. Maybe she saw it. I don't know. But someone said like, here's, you know, FYI, your scene didn't make it in, but you are in the credits, so you're going to get residuals, which at the time did feel super significant.
That's a huge win.
Yeah. And so I did go see it. I went and saw it at the Grove. I think I probably went to the farm that used to be there. There's not a real farm, but it was a place called The Farm. Uh-huh. It was like a cafe next to the movie theater in the Grove because I would go there. That's a place that I would even go when I had like time between auditions where you're sort of in the middle of town and you're wearing the nice clothes and you don't have time to do anything but just like kill time somewhere. Right. I feel like I would see movies by myself a lot early on. And the farm made these giant chocolate cookies. So like chocolate cookie with chocolate chips in it. And there would be two big cookies wedged together with some delicious white frosting in between called a Farmio. I would get a Farmio and go watch a movie and then just get high off sugar, so much sugar. That was shortly before I had to give up both gluten and sugar.
Oh, no.
Probably gave it to myself. I'm surprised I'm not diabetic. But yeah, I remember seeing it. I think I probably did. I'm sure a friend went and saw it with me. But I know that there was hardly anyone in the theater.
Yeah. Do you remember your reaction to the film itself?
Oh, yeah. I was like, I laughed all the way through. I was like, this is garbage. Oh,
Now I'm picturing that Janet Varney laugh in a theater with probably four people in it.
For sure. And also, I remember sitting in sort of, you know, still picking an area that was not like you have a whole run of the theater essentially, but I still was like tucked into a corner on the right hand side. So I was sort of looking at the screen to my far left and really far away, but then just a sea of empty seats in front of me with like a speckle of one or two people. But then I was really excited when I saw my name in the credits. Yeah. I mean, I never had. And I don't do a lot of film work. So I think it's still exciting. And it's so exciting when we see our friends' names, right? Having done this for a dozen years now, I've just watched a movie that a friend of mine was in the entire time, and I still get a thrill seeing their character name and their actual name in the credits.
Like, was your family
so exciting?
Like, did they brag and go like run to the movie theater
I feel certain that no one in my family.
No,
did.
What?
Oh no, I don't have that kind of. I mean, my dad hates going to movies, so he would have just waited for it to go out on, you know, video or whatever.
Yeah.
So he would have rented the DVD. I'm sure he did. He's very proud of me, but his pride has certain limits to where, like, he's still not going to go see. And I'm sure by the time, I mean, one bad review and he was probably like,
My dad's the same way. Every time we talk, he wants to hear all about podcasting. But he... At one point, I finally said, you know, do you want me to send you a link to one of these? Oh, no, I can't do that.
My dad listened to a few of my podcasts, and then he was like, I can't keep up, Jay.
Yeah.
Like, it was something I never asked him to.
He was stressed by, like, the media aspect of it. And he's like, I can't, you know, we don't even watch Fox News anymore. No, not true. That's not true. I've come to find. But somehow he's equating, like, having to be bombarded by cable news pundits.
And
I'm okay. I actually prefer he wouldn't listen because
I don't want my dad to either. I say wonderful things about him 90% of the time, but also, like, I've been so honest about drugs I've taken and all that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
So I don't encourage him to listen to. I was really relieved that he was like, Jay, you know, I try to keep up with everything you're doing. I really like to listen to a couple of them, but they're just coming out so fast. Yeah. I just don't know how to. I just can't keep up.
And they're serialized, so I can't just jump in anywhere.
Yeah. You know? Oh, Dad, you actually can't. No, never mind. Good idea, Dad. And even now, I would say in the last handful of years, I'm very, very lucky in that I work a lot, and he's totally given up. Because
it's too much.
I don't tell him anymore.
Yeah.
Most of the time, I don't know. If it's just I'm so grateful for it. It's more that I don't like watching myself, so I don't really keep track. I'll retweet someone saying, like, you're on American Housewife tonight or whatever, but I probably won't watch it because I just get uncomfortable watching myself, as many people do. And there were a couple of times where, like, every once in a while my dad will send me an email that's like, hey, Jay, was up at your aunt's house and her friend was raving about your performance on blah, blah, blah. I guess I wish I would have known about that. I had to find out about it from someone else. Like, there's some sort of hurt feelings about me not keeping him up to date.
Option to not watch that ahead of time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh. But yeah, I think we've sort of, like, he hasn't even seen the show that I star on because he doesn't have that channel and he just hasn't. It's like, he knows he'll see it. No, the show called Stand Against Evil on IFC.
Right.
He doesn't have IFC. So,
settled.
You know, he's just waiting.
There it is. It's settled. And you have a season
just
two, right?
Eventually going to see it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think he's not in the same hurry he was when, you know, I had just started working and getting jobs and stuff. And it was more novel to both of us.
Yeah.
I guess.
I know.
You know?
Yeah. It happens on both ends.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Yeah. So let's talk about podcasts and some of the stuff you're doing. You have the JV Club on mm-hmm. the Nerdist Network. Mm-hmm. You've got Stand Against Evil. You also are one of the co-producers for how many years now of Sketchfest, which has been such a great home to Superego and all the.
Boy.
It's so great.
Yeah, we
and
love having
it's
you
an
up there.
Institution, this thing.
It's been around. It's, I guess we're turning 17.
Oh my God.
This year. 17. Wow. 17 or 18?
I think it's 17. It really is, like, of the great comedy festivals you've got, you know, Just for Laughs or Aspen, and that, but Sketchfest. It's one of the big ones. And
yeah.
You and Cole created it.
David Owen, our partner, who's up in San Francisco still. Yeah, I appreciate you saying that because we are right in the middle now of like starting to get into it.
Yeah.
And this is the whole process of getting to the point where the festival is actually beginning is so incredibly stressful. And it somehow always happens, but there's a real one day at a time element to it. And so it's always nice to get those compliments when we're in the middle of kind of going like –
yeah, right now it feels like a slog.
How are we going to get through this?
Yeah.
Oh. It's hard.
I'm so glad you do it because as someone who's both participated in it and experienced it, it's an unbelievable
couple of weeks. Straight to the bank.
Please.
Of my account for the residuals of this podcast. Oh, and I should also give a shout out to the other show I'm on called You're the Worst, which is in its fourth season now because it's a great season.
You're everywhere.
Well...
you're here
much to
today.
My dad's chagrin.
I mean, right. As far as I know right now, you're everywhere. That's all I can see. Anything else to plug? Where can people find you? And you can deliver that however you want. I know when we do Spontaneation together, Paul's very succinct about where you are found digitally.
Yeah.
Like he wants you
but
to
But you
right
feel
to
that
point.
I could ramble for 15
I want
minutes
you to take
about
some space and some time and do it how you want to do it.
I have a website called janetvarney.com. I try to stay updated on that. I have a lovely fan friend who volunteered to redesign
That's
it and
nice.
Take some initiative to post appearances that I have and stuff. And thank God for her because that's one of the first things I forget to do. And then I'm just at Janet Varney on Twitter and the JV Club on Instagram, which I try to stop in on every once in a while, but I'm pretty bad on that too.
Well, you do what you can do. And I'm glad that one of the things you could do was come in here today because you're just the best.
Matt Gorley, I feel the same. And I was so excited to do this. I was very excited when you started this podcast. I think it's such a wonderful idea.
And we finally got to the bottom of Catwoman.
We did. So. We know why it won a Razzie.
That's right. It did. Yeah. Well, thank you, Janet.
Thanks, Matt Gorley. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Chris Bannon, and Colin Anderson. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.